The Library Channel is proud to present the Simon Ortiz and the Labriola Center Lecture on Indigenous Land, Culture, and Community. Sponsored by the ASU American Indian Studies Program, ASU Department of English, ASU American Indian Policy Institute, ASU Labriola Center, and the Heard Museum. Recorded on March 24, 2011, at the Heard Museum in Phoenix, Simon Ortiz opens the program.
Hello, and how are you this evening? It's always good to see the community with you, and we, of course, are the community at this moment, but also, of course, we are also part of the larger community that is Phoenix. It's not just ASU and its campus, but beyond Arizona State University and beyond the campus, of course, is the larger community of Phoenix, and then, of course, the region and the state and the world, right? Yes. And it's good that we can think like that, you know, because it's reassurance, you know, that we are Meyona Hanostata. Eme'e Anezi Ekaititan Kometzi Stiutsupuno. Because as a community, you know, which we need, you know, for ourselves, it's always a joyous time and moment, because that is how we then are able to press on forward in a positive way. So thank you for coming. Dawa eh, thank you to all of you for joining us tonight. This community is always good just for the simple fact of being together. We are one with each other when we are within the community. So thank you in that sense, Dawa eh, for being here. I want to thank, of course, the ASU American Indian Studies Program or department, and the English department at ASU, and the Labriola National American Indian Data Center, the Faculty of History in the School of Historical, Philosophical, and Religious Studies, and Women and Gender Studies in the School of Social Transformation, and of course the Heard Museum, which provides tremendous support and partnership as a community organization. I want to repeat some quotes from our guest tonight, Mr. Leroy Littlebear. First one, for Albert Einstein, the business of science is reality. If science is a search for reality, if science is a search for knowledge at the leading edges of the humanly knowable, then there are sciences other than the Western science of measurement. One of these other sciences is Native American science. And another quote. Western science is all about measurement. The English language has a hard time explaining some scientific phenomenon, so it adopts the language of mathematics, the language of science. Art and literature, therefore, get dropped from the picture. Nobody wants to learn a new language, so most people hate math. Native American languages are better able to express themselves, these ideas. There is more flexibility, more room for possibilities, more room for art and literature. And then one more quote. One way to create change is for people to stand back and reflect, to look at the big picture. When we look at the world linearly, we look at specifics. We see only tiny little aspects of the big picture and not the picture itself. This leads to our seeing things in isolation, disconnected. All these are observations made by, as I said, Leroy Littlebear, who is our speaker for tonight's Simon Ortiz and Labriola Center lecture on indigenous land, culture, and community. Leroy Littlebear is a member of the Blood Tribe or First Nations of the Blackfoot Confederacy in Canada. Head of the SEED Graduate Institute presently, he is a former director of the American Indian Program at Harvard University and professor emeritus of Native Studies at the University of Lethbridge, where he was department chair for 25 years. Littlebear has served as a legal and constitutional advisor to the Assembly of First Nations and has served on many committees, commissions, and boards dealing with First Nations issues. In 2003, he was awarded the prestigious National Aboriginal Achievement Award for Education, the highest honor bestowed by Canada's First Nations community. He has edited three books, including Pathways in Self-Determination, Canadian Indians and the Canadian State, and Quest for Justice, Aboriginal Peoples and Aboriginal Rights, and Governments in Conflict and Indian Nations in Canada. With these words, let us welcome Leroy Littlebear.
Tikhonex Matsinochpon of Xistikoisk. Tixini, Tipamuxini, Nitamu kickstarkas to two. Carcas to two is a satrsuarki, a kupuki, damixim stolsi. Nistuan nakaukika skinioa. E naxe ixe, Kainoa, Kendenuchtu, do. I was singing my song, our clan song. And I was introducing myself. My name is, in Blackfoot, is Lowhorn. And I belong to the Small Robes Band of the Blood Tribe, who in turn are members of the Blackfoot Confederacy. Okay. I first want to give recognition. And the reason why I was singing our clan song is to bring good message and good thoughts from our territory to this territory. And I want to give recognition to the people whose Aboriginal territory this is, you know, and consequently why I sang our clan song. I want to thank the Simon and the Labriola Center, ASU, for inviting me to come in. As I was telling a little earlier audience this morning, giving me the chance to mislead you a little bit, okay? So be prepared to be misled. And I also want to thank the Heard Museum. Somebody was telling me, you're going to be speaking at the museum, and I told him, that's what I heard, you know? And so I want to thank the Heard Museum to be, you know, being partners to this lecture series. And so I'm very honored to be in your presence. I'm very humbled to be asked to come and share thoughts with you. When Simon was introducing me, he was talking about my legal background. And yes, I have that legal background, but my earliest interests from high school on had always been in science. In fact, when I first started university, and in the back of my mind, I was going to go into chemistry and so on, maybe physics and so on. So I've always had this interest, great interest, in the area of science. But probably the trickster came along and led me a different way. And before you know it, I was in the legal field, you know. And, you know, and at one time, I was accepted into a PhD program at the University of Chicago to go into the area of philosophy. But like I said, the trickster figure came in, and the best of plans, you know, get changed and so on. So, you know, I really love science. And, you know, but Western scientists have really kind of, you know, appropriated the whole notion of science and the whole approach as to what is science and how we do science. When we think about it, really science depends on, and what is science really depends on, who is doing the defining, okay? And so in many cases, what we now accept as science or definition of science, a lot of science is left out, okay? It's left out, and it's left sitting there. And in some cases, it might be a good idea. Why? Well, because I'm thinking of somebody like Daniel Cochrane. I don't know if anybody has ever heard of Daniel Cochrane. He was Irish. And in the history of Ireland, the British had come and colonized Ireland, just like they did North America. But they had, you know, the British, when they came to Ireland, they acted as though the Irish didn't exist. Even though they lived alongside and so on, they acted as though they didn't exist. Someone just went about as though those people didn't exist. Well, Daniel Cochrane wrote a book called The Hidden Ireland. And what he basically said in the book was, hey, the fact that we were being ignored was in fact a blessing in disguise, because it allowed us to to continue with our culture, with our traditions, with our, you know, literatures, our songs, and so on, without them being appropriated by the British. Okay? Well, in many ways, that notion can be applied to North America. We continue our songs, we continue our ceremonies, and so on, and they have not been appropriated and made use of. And I'm thinking that now is the time for what I've been referring to as a collaboration to take place, because we've come to a point where the existing Western approach to science is really not giving the answers. They're simply asking more questions, okay? But no answers are, you know, are coming forth. As Simon was quoting about Einstein, I used to tell my students that I knew Einstein, that he was my favorite scientist, that I used to go and drink with him, you know, and that when he got crazy, his hair would stand up, you know. You see the stereotype picture of Einstein. Well, the thing is, he is one of my favorite scientists. Einstein talked about science, and he said that it was really the pursuit of knowledge, that the business of science was really about, you know, about reality. It was really stretching the envelope, the edges of where human knowledge was, you know, and trying to stretch it more to find something new. Well, when somebody thinks about Einstein, in his theories of relativity and so forth, Einstein did not come up with those discoveries by doing the same old thing. He did not come up with his relativity theories by doing more math, okay? He came up with those discoveries because he challenged the underlying philosophical base of the existing science of the day, okay? That's how he came up with his theories, his relativity theories, for instance. Well, I think it's that we've come to that stage again where I think we need to look at and reflect on the existing philosophical basis, the existing paradigms, and the existing methodologies that we use in science. And I think the best place to go there is to go and search out there with our, you know, Aboriginal people in the Americas. They have it. We've got knowledge that hasn't been untapped, okay? Let me just give you one quick example, and I'll speak a little bit more about it. For instance, a large part of the thinking process is controlled by the language itself. Most of us think that, hey, I can think any which way, that I've got freedom of thought, when in reality, the particular language you speak leads you down a garden path. So let me give you just a quick example, and I'll come back to it later. And that is, if I were to say in English, dynamics without motion, you would immediately think that's an inherent contradiction. See? Well, we were talking to a Haida Indian from the Queen Charlotte Islands, and we were asking him about dynamics without motion. He thought about it for a while, but then he comes back and he says, well, that's easy to explain. He says, you know, go out on the ocean. You know, they're coastal people. Go out on the ocean in a canoe. And when you're far enough away from the land, where you can't see the land and use it as a reference point, you know your canoe is moving because you're rowing it. But 360 degrees around you, you're always the same distance from the horizon. He says, that's dynamics without motion. See, in other words, an example of where just native languages can explain certain things that are paradoxes, for instance, in English and even in math. Okay. The Western approach to science has, to a large extent, been, you know, one of measurement. If we can't measure something, it's almost as though it doesn't exist. Okay? But if you can look at the land survey system, you know, northeast quarter of the southeast quarter, etc., you know, of section such and such and so forth, you know. Well, the thing is, we've taken that measuring system and we've superimposed it on the land. And we're now stuck with that system, when in reality, nature is not mathematical. See? In other words, the notion of mathematics has been superimposed on nature. And Einstein once asked, you know, he was wondering about it. He says, how can it be that mathematics, being a product of human thought, which is independent of experience, is so admirably appropriate to the objects of reality? So in other words, we've been taking something that's not a part of nature, but something, you know, that we have artificially created. And the reason is because our language, that is the English language, which I'll talk some more about, does not, you know, cannot explain, because of certain structure it has, cannot explain certain things. And so scientists have really adopted a different language, in this case, mathematics. When in reality, Navajo doesn't have to refer to mathematics. It, Navajo language can explain it. Blackfoot can explain it. Cree can explain it. Mohawk can explain it. See, without having to depend on this other system. And again, one of the things that's very important is that a lot is left out in terms of the scientific approach. A lot is left out. The notion of relationships, the notion of spirit, and so on, none of that is included in the area of our, in the area of science, in our scientific approach. So, in order to appreciate and to come to understand these other sciences, one has to look at paradigms, okay? In other words, the foundational basis of our thinking processes, okay? And that's what, for instance, Einstein was doing. We have to look at those foundational bases. Let me go through the tenets or foundation bases of native thought. And I have used up here on the screen, you know, and I've used pictures of space, outer space, taken by the Hubble Space Telescope, okay, to illustrate some of these points. The first tenet of the native paradigm is what we refer to as constant flux, okay? And if you were able to imagine this flux, if it was animated, you would see a constant motion, you know, of energy waves and so on, light and so on, going back and forth. Now, so this notion of flux is a very important part of the native thinking. Have you ever tried to make an appointment with a Blackfoot or a Navajo? Okay? Well, when you try, and try it next time, they'll tell you, yeah, okay, let's meet at 2 o'clock, okay? But then they'll tell you, but if I'm not there at 2 o'clock, I'm over at my grandma's, okay? If you don't see my horse over there, that means I'm over at my uncle's, okay? In other words, they give you a whole bunch of caveats and so on. Well, guess why? That's because of the flux notion. Things are forever, always in motion. Things are forever changing and so on. From that native thinking, in other words, there's nothing certain. There's nothing certain. The only thing that is certain is change. See, that's the only thing that is certain. So things are forever moving. Things are forever, you know, dissolving, reforming, transforming, and so forth. See, that's one of the most important tenets of the native paradigm, is this notion of flux. A second part of it is that the flux itself, yeah, the flux itself, everything in existence, everything in creation consists of energy waves, okay? Now, in classical physics, we talk in terms of matter, particles, subatomic particles. Well, in the native way, we talk in terms of energy waves. And those energy waves are very special. Why? Because it's those energy waves that know. It's not you. It's the energy waves that know. All of us are simply combinations of energy waves. And it's the energy waves that we refer to as spirit. See, and I guess people kind of recognize that, but have a hard time articulating. But that's the reason why spirituality is so closely associated with Aboriginal people. See? Because anything, everything here, anything that exists, including you and I, are simply combinations of these energy waves. I guess when we pass away, when we die, all it means is a dissipation of that particular combination that makes for you. See, the energy waves are still there. It's just that that particular combination doesn't exist anymore. See? So those energy waves are really what we refer to as spirit. A third part of the paradigm is that everything is animate. Okay. There's nothing in Blackfoot, for instance. There's nothing in Blackfoot that is inanimate. Everything is animate. Well, if you step back a little bit and you say, well, if we're all animate, we all consist of those energy waves. Therefore, everything, those rocks, those trees, those animals out there, all have spirit, just like we do as humans. So if they all have spirit, that's what we refer to as all my relations. You'll hear in Native prayers, all my relations. When we're talking about all my relations, we're not talking about human relations. We're talking about those rocks out there. See? I was talking to some rocks over here when I came to Phoenix, but they couldn't understand Blackfoot, so. I was telling the other group, too, this morning that every once in a while I end up with an ID problem, and that I was looking in the mirror this morning and it looked the other way, you know. But that when I do have an ID problem, I would get on United or American or Air Canada to remind myself that I'm a Plains Indian, you know. And that part of the cause for my ID problem was that I'm Blackfoot, but that up in Canada we've gone metric, and we can't identify ourselves as Blackfoot, and that black meter doesn't sound very good, you know. Anyways. So there is this notion of flux, energy waves, the energy waves being the spirit, everything being animate, and everything is related. Can show the everything about relationships. Everything is interrelated. And consequently, why the native view has always been a very holistic view, as opposed to, you know, being very specific, being very reductionist, so on. We always look at the big picture. Examples of this arise, for instance, I can give you a little personal anecdote when I was in residential school back home on the res. We had a teacher, you know, that was giving us lessons, about the capital cities of the provinces, similar to state capitals and states within the union. And when she finished her lesson, she says to us, let me see what we've learned. So she called on my friend who was sitting in the first row, saying, "Hey, Moses, what's the capital city of Canada?" And Moses was scratching his head, not looking at the teacher at all, looking up at the ceiling and saying, the capital city of Canada. Before Moses answered, the teacher says, "Next." And I was behind Moses, so she was pointing to me. And immediately what jumped in my mind was, geez, you know, this teacher is really rude. So really making my friend Moses look stupid in front of the whole class. Okay? I know that Moses knows the answer because we were just out there in the yard talking about it. He knows. I know Moses knows the answer, and I know the answer. But in my mind I said, I'm not going to perform for this teacher. So guess what I did? Capital city of Canada is, and she says, "Next." Well, guess what? She went up and down the rows, did not get an answer. In other words, we, even as little kids, we were more concerned about the relational aspect. We did not want anyone to kind of be by themselves and so forth. We all had to be, you know, together. So that relational aspect is very, very important. Everything is interrelated. In Western science, we take and isolate things and so on, and we never really look at the whole. The next tenet is what I refer to as renewal, okay? And I try to put a picture from the Hubble Space Telescope showing, you know, a circular picture, a circle to show this notion of renewal, okay? Well, let me try and explain the notion of renewal. How many of you have seen the way back in the 1970s, it's an old movie now, Jurassic Park? Remember Jurassic Park? Okay. It was about the dinosaurs. Okay. Well, we asked one time these elders, you know, those dinosaurs used to rule the world, just like we do today as humans. They had a run of the earth. But where are they now? Why did they disappear? And they came back. Those elders said, maybe they didn't do their renewal ceremonies. Okay? And, you know, took me a little while to really understand what they were talking about. But when they were talking about renewal ceremonies, if you look at it from a slightly different perspective, okay? I was explaining that to couple of our people at the table at lunchtime, and that is, take the notion of body temperature, you know, body normal temperature, what is it, 96, 98.6, okay? I get crossed between metric and so on. 98.6. Well, think of a situation where your body temperature rose by 10 degrees and stayed there, or it drops by 10 degrees and stayed there. Would you last very long? I don't think so. Okay? In other words, we as humans live within a very narrow spectrum of ideal conditions for us to continue to exist. Okay? We live in a very narrow gap. And as I was saying, we as Homo sapiens lived alongside Neanderthal man. Where is he now? And we're still around. See? It's because, hey, maybe we were doing and renewing certain things that continue to sustain us. Okay. So the notion of sustainability, the notion of renewal, is something that says, hey, in that flux that exists, there are regular patterns. We search out for those regular patterns that makes for our continuing existence. See? We search for regular patterns, okay, in that flux. And it's those regular patterns that we want to be able to use as reference points, as to hang our hat on, to say, hey, this is what continues to give us life. If I can just quickly jump over to the fish, okay? I was telling somebody I didn't want to eat any fish because I was scared to get hooked. Yeah. She got it. But talking about the dinosaurs, the fish, you know, preceded the dinosaurs by millions of years. The dinosaurs are gone. The fish is still around. I wonder what he's doing that continues for his existence. As part of the relational network, we would say, we should try and learn from that fish. See? Because look how long he's been around, when we as humans are very, you know, young, relatively newcomers on the scene. See? So when we talk about relationships, that's what we should learn from these other beings. So, renewal is a very, very important part of the native paradigm. Land is also one of those tenets of the native paradigm. The land is so sacred. We refer to it as mother because it gives life. We refer to the earth as, you know, the creator in many cases because it's sacred. It gives us life, you know. So the land is very important. In other words, if we were to use scientific, cosmic language, we would say that we are spatial thinkers. We think in terms of space as opposed to the notion of time. We can say, for instance, that in English, we have a religious holiday, okay? And that is Christmas. Well, if I'm an English thinker, it would not matter if I'm in Durban, South Africa, if I'm in Phoenix, or for that matter, if I was on the moon. It wouldn't matter. As long as my little timepiece says December the 25th, doesn't matter where I'm at, what do? I celebrate Christmas. In other words, my main reference point is the notion of time. In Blackfoot, it is place. We also have a very important ceremony we call the Sundance. Well, on our res, there's a place called the Belly Buttes. Okay. And it's called the Belly Buttes for an important reason. Because most people think that the mind is where the power is. But it's not. In the human makeup, the real power is right here. This is where the real power is, okay? And so that's what it's called after, the Belly Buttes. That's where the Sundance occurs. There's no such a thing as a Sundance happening in Phoenix, even if the whole tribe was here to say, hey, let's have a Sundance. No, it only happens at one place. So if we're going to participate, hey, we've got to go back. If I am in Durban, South Africa, I have to come home. See? It's quite a difference in terms of references, okay? Here one is time reference. The other one is place, space, reference. So, language is also very important. As I said, language leads you down a garden pathway. And you have to think within the boundaries of that language. I gave you an example regarding, dynamics without motion. Well, the ordinary English sentence is structured as A equals or is B. Okay? That's the ordinary English structure. A is B. I often asked, if A and B are the same, if A equals B, then why do we need B? Why can't we just have A? See? So, in other words, that's the reason why we would have to say in English, it is raining. In Blackfoot, we just simply say, raining. In other words, that copula, the is or the equal sign, is not necessary. In English, we're noun-oriented. Everything is about noun. I'm not saying it's exclusively noun, but we're noun-oriented. In Blackfoot, we're process, action-oriented. Okay? When you're thinking in English, it's kind of like if you use, as an example, a film strip. It's almost as though we stop the film and we look at one picture frame, see, and study that one picture frame, and we know it inside out. In Blackfoot, the show goes on. We don't stop it. The show goes on. But it's as though I'm running alongside the happening, and I'm expressing, describing what's going on. Okay? In English, we're good English speakers if we have a large vocabulary. Okay? The official Oxford English Dictionary probably has about 900,000 words in it. Okay? And we would be considered good English speakers if we knew a good number of all those 900,000 words. Well, a linguist who worked on a Navajo reservation, Gary Witherspoon, counted how many ways you can conjugate in Navajo the verb to go, in English, the English verb to go, how many times you can conjugate that. And he came out with something like 356,000 different ways to conjugate the verb to go in Navajo. In other words, it would take three Navajo verbs to surpass the Oxford English Dictionary. So, you know, from an educational point of view, think about that. You know, how many different ways, and, you know, talking about specificities and so on, and that's not being taken into consideration. In Blackfoot, we don't carry around a vocabulary. When I speak the Blackfoot language, I make it up. And I make it up as I go, in spite of the fact that there may be some conventional ways of saying certain things, but I basically make it up. In other words, if you can think of the periodic table that chemists use for the elements, all the different elements, what do chemists do? Well, hey, they make combinations. So when I put sodium and chlorine together, what do I get? Sodium chloride, you know, our table salt. In other words, we play around with these combinations. So if I'm a good chemist, hey, I can, you know, fool around with all these different combinations. Well, if you can look at the Blackfoot language, for instance, carrying around a periodic table of primary sounds. Okay? A good Blackfoot speaker is very good at making combinations. So in other words, I'm not carrying around a big inventory of words, a big vocabulary. All I'm carrying around is my little periodic table. If I'm going to be a good Blackfoot speaker, I'm going to be I have to be trained as to how to be very skillful at making combinations. Okay. So those kind of differences make for a big, a very different way of looking at reality out there. The Western paradigm, we can say, largely consists of linearity, singularity, reductionism, and it's binary. Okay? I can talk about each aspect over here, but let me just talk about the binary notion. Okay. The binary notion results in dichotomous thinking, either or. And we can go down the list, day, night, black, white, animate, inanimate, and so on, saint, sinner, darkness, light, and so on. Okay, we can go down the list. What happens is, a watertight division exists between these dichotomies. Okay? There's a watertight division. And you can't transcend that division. When I'm telling my students about and showing to them, usually I play around with them a little bit, and I tell them, let me draw a dichotomy of good and evil, and I'll give you a word, and you tell me if it falls on the good or on the evil side. Tell them, okay, ready? And I give them the word widget. And they think about widget, you can see their 256K memory spinning and so on. They can't, really, because they've never had experiences with widgets. And then I tell them, but let me give you a different word that we all know about. Okay? Ready? And I tell them, sex. Well, they kind of sit there, and eventually someone move around in their seat and so on. And eventually somebody in the background usually comes in. Well, of course, it's good. It's great. And I said, let's think about that. How many of us, when we were kids, especially if we were brought up in a good Christian tradition, were taught that sex was a sin? And then when we get older and we get married, and especially if we get married in the church, all of a sudden it becomes a sacred institution. How does that happen? See? Well, we can't transcend the watertight boundary, but what we've done is we've developed a rite of passage to get around it, see? And that's how we shift from the bad side over to the good side, see? And so this notion of dichotomous thinking, in many cases, for instance, in the scientific field, causes paradoxes. For instance, the whole notion of cause and effect in physics is a paradox. You know, it's a chicken and egg argument. So just that one aspect of the language is, you know, causes a different notions about science. Probably the best example is linearity, and linearity is best exemplified by the notion of time. Okay? We go from A to B to C to D on down the line. Well, the thing is, in English, I would say, my brother came to visit me for 1 week. Okay. In other words, a unit of time. And in Blackfoot, I would say my brother came to visit me to the seventh day. You could see the difference, in other words, a repetition, you know, of days. Okay. And that notion of time, just like the land survey system, just like mathematics, is superimposed on, you know, our explanations of what the cosmos, what the universe is all about, okay? And, you know, we talk about it in terms of past, present, and future, okay? And it's as though we're standing by a river, we're facing upstream. This river of time is flowing past you. Past is back here. I'm looking into the future. See, that's how we picture the notion of time. Okay? Well, in Blackfoot, we're very sophisticated in our notions of time. Okay? And I'll just talk about two levels of time. One is somewhat similar to the linear notion. I can say in Blackfoot, Anok, meaning right now. I can say Apinakose, meaning tomorrow. Mr. Papinakose, the day after tomorrow. And I can work backwards. Anok, right now. Matune, yesterday. And day before yesterday, Mr. Putun. And I stopped there. In Blackfoot, we stopped there. It's not because we can't count beyond past two. In fact, we can count to infinity in Blackfoot. But there comes a point when you say, what's the point? Trying to count to infinity, what's the point? But you can count to infinity in Blackfoot. But 2 days is sufficient. And that is, you know, beyond the 2 days, the best we can say about it is just is. Okay? In other words, in English, what we would refer to as past, present, and future would all amalgamate into a concept of just is. Okay? Now, at a different level, what I refer to a cosmic level, and this is best illustrated by our medicine wheels, those medicine wheels, the spokes on the medicine wheels are aligned with solstices, sometimes with stars, and so forth. Okay? Well, when alignments take place, certain things have to happen. In other words, at the cosmic level, we're very exact. We're very exact. Okay? One of our medicine wheels, some technicians came over and measured one of the spokes with the solstice. 3 years ago, and they found that it was 0.07 degrees off center with the solstice. In other words, 0.07 of a degree off. And the only reason it was off is because of the precession of the axis. You know, it takes 26,000 years roughly for the precession of the axis to go make one circle. Okay, that's the Mayan great cycle. Okay, well, this was off just 0.07 degrees. And over in Chaco Canyon, there's what? What did they call it? There's that setup too for marking the time and so on, and lined with the solstice and so on. So the notion of time is very important in science. It's also very important in native thinking. So what do we, you know, what are some of the ways that we can come to when we see these differences, these paradigms? What do I mean by a collaboration? Okay. Well, let me use the notion of superstrings. Superstring theory came into existence back in the 50s. And there was not one superstring theory. It was more like about five or so superstring theories that have been more or less amalgamated, and they now refer to it as the matrix, a matrix approach. But superstring theory basically is a situation where it's all mathematical, okay? It's all mathematical calculations. Through those mathematical calculations, they came up with something like 26 dimensions, okay? Think about it, because we supposedly are four-dimensional, okay? They came up with 26. Through their calculations, they were able to come up and reduce it down to 10 dimensions. And if you add the notion of time, it becomes 11. And that's where they've been stuck. The superstring theories have been stuck at those 10 or 11 dimensions. And they have not been able to reduce those down to the four-dimensional basis that we're supposed to be about. In other words, height, width, depth, and notion of time. And it's gotten to the point where now the superstring theorists are now saying, maybe we should forget about those four dimensions. I think we're more than four. Maybe we're 11, you know? And so they're, in other words, they're starting to think in a holistic manner and getting away from this reductionism. But the reason I'm talking about superstring theorists is because in what is known in quantum physics as the standard model, as part of the standard model, the physicists have come up with four major forces in the universe, okay? What they refer to as the strong nuclear force, the weak nuclear force, electromagnetism, and gravity. Okay. strong nuclear force is what keeps things together. In other words, so that this thing doesn't fall apart, this stand, it's what keeps things together. The weak nuclear force results in decay. Okay? Electromagnetism is about light. And gravity, we all know what happens if we jump off the roof. Okay. Well, the physicists, what they've been trying to do is and play around with what they call the grand unified theory. The grand unified theory is that supposedly they're coming close to, and in some cases have succeeded in synchronizing strong, weak, and electromagnetism, but their problem is with Einstein. Okay? They can't bring gravity into the fold. And scientists basically say, just the way that the formulations are set out, you're never going to have grand unified theory. Well, grand unified, you know, but they're still trying. They're wasting lots of time and money and our tax dollars because they get all these grants and so on, trying to bring about this grand unified theory. When in reality, they can't do it. And I'm one of those people that say, it'll never happen, using what is known as the standard model. It'll never happen. Because it's very simple. Gravity is about motion. It's about motion. The physicists are talking in terms of matter, particles. That's like oranges and apples. Okay? The only time you're going to be able to bring about grand unified theory is if you have a common denominator. In other words, that's why I have some hope in the superstring theorists, because they're talking about motion. In their calculation, it's about these one-dimensional strings of energy that they're talking about. So in other words, if we talked about it in terms of motion to motion, you'll have a common denominator. Then you can bring about a grand unified theory. But as long as we're talking about it in terms of apples and oranges, motion and particles, it'll never happen. See? And so we've talked to superstring theorists and tell them, hey, you should learn Navajo. Because that language is all about motion. It's all about process. It'll bring you so much closer. If you were able to speak Navajo, you'd be able to understand, you know, and get at what you're trying to prove and bring about. See? The latest effects, the latest attempts, I don't know if any of you have heard about the what is called the Large Hadron Collider over in Geneva, Switzerland, extending a little bit into France. And one of the mandates of this particle accelerator is to come up with and prove the existence of what is known as the Higgs particle. H-I-G-G-S, the Higgs particle. Now, according to the physicists, they're saying what they're dealing with is we all know and familiar with Einstein equals MC squared. They say, we know that in our calculations, the Higgs particle should be here, all right? Because that's what takes and converts energy into matter. The Higgs particle, or sometimes referred to as the Higgs field, converts energy into matter, and vice versa. But they have not been able to prove the existence of the Higgs particle. Well, we went and talked to an elder about it and explained to him, and it took him a little while to understand what these physicists were trying to do. But once he had a good idea of it, he came back and he says, that's easy. He says, the Higgs particle is what we call spirit. Well, if those physicists would learn Blackfoot, Navajo, we would be able to talk, okay? And like I said, because English, because of its structure, can't explain certain things, therefore a reliance on a foreign language, which is math, does not happen in Navajo. In other words, the language is rich enough that it can explain those seeming paradoxes. So that's where I see the collaboration taking place. Okay. That's where I see partnerships occurring in science. Okay. In many ways, in quantum physics, we talk about the same things. Things such as the quantum physicists talk about constant motion. We talk about constant flux. The quantum physicists, you know, talk about, you know, non-locality. They have a problem with the notion of non-locality. It's not a problem in Blackfoot. You know, it's not. Okay? And those kind of major concepts in, you know, in physics and in native thought are the kind of things that I think if Western science were to stop and reflect, we'll come to realize, hey, there's a hidden science, just like Daniel Cochrane was talking about. There's a hidden science that has not been made use of. See? I think I had a few comparative notes up here where I say native science and quantum physics. In Western thought, we think about chaos over order. In other words, we all remember Walter Cronkite, the old CBS news anchor. What was his famous saying at the end of his newscasts? And that's the way it is. Okay? Well, when we think about chaos over order, what we're really saying is that there is an underlying order, and the assumption is this is the way God made it. There's this underlying order. If there is chaos, it's we as humans that are causing the chaos, okay? Because we're not understanding the underlying order, okay? And that's what we're searching for, you know? Einstein again, God does not play dice with the universe. In other words, there is this underlying order. Well, from a Native point of view, it really is order over chaos. In other words, the chaos is the constant flux. We never know what's going to happen. See? Things are forever changing. What we're trying to do is our culture is our window looking out into the universe, looking out into what we call reality. And that flux that's going on, we're trying to put an order to it by establishing regularity, looking for regular patterns. See, that's how we try to bring out order. So in Native science, you cannot get away from looking at culture along with the science. The science is the culture. See, in Western science, what we're really trying to do is undress ourselves from our culture so that there's nothing that interferes with our view of the underlying order. And consequently, the emphasis on objectivity. See? When in reality, everything we know is subjective. Yeah. So that's one, you know, major difference. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. In Native science and quantum physics, hey, consciousness affects reality. Something similar to Native science. Matter or objects are, along with Einstein, space-time curvatures, they call it. Okay? In Blackfoot, they're mere descriptions. In other words, what is matter is really, what are objects are really just descriptions. Time in quantum physics is the space-time continuum, okay? And Blackfoot, it just is, okay? Matter in physics is about particles, whether those be, you know, atoms, neutrons, protons, electrons, neutrinos, quarks, and so on, okay? In our case, it's wave. We're wave thinkers. Okay? We think in terms of waves. Okay? Reality, the scientists are beginning to say, there's no deep reality. Okay? There's no deep reality that exists out there. In ours, it's all subjective. It's what you know. That's what you've come to experience. Cause and effect is a paradox. In Blackfoot, it's either all cause or all effect. You know? It's all cause. See? So the paradox, the either or notion, is really not a problem. Perspectives, we take reductionism and it's holistic. Method, we use experiments in Western science, okay? And that's because we're impatient. Right? In other words, we don't want to wait for nature, so we speed it up by doing the experiments. In Native science, hey, we let nature play itself out. We observe, you know? It's about observation. Knowledge in Western thinking is cumulative. In Native thought, knowledge has to be renewed. Okay? And the example I give about renewal from this point of view is not always, but generally speaking, you can imagine the situation of a young couple who, you know, who have gone over and are past the honeymoon period, whether it's 6 months, whether it's 7 years or so. One morning, and like I said, not always, but generally speaking, the wife, one morning over a cup of coffee, she tells her husband, "You have changed." And him seeing something coming says, "What do you mean I've changed?" You know. And she says, "You know, when we were dating, when we were courting, you used to bring me the flowers. You used to bring me the gifts. You don't do that anymore." And he says, "I married you, didn't I?" Well, if we just stop there, you can see the wife wanting the renewal. Okay? In other words, like anything else, love needs to be renewed. Just like knowledge needs to be renewed. See? Whereas for the guy, it was a one-time thing. Okay, I've married you. You go do your thing, I'll go play golf with the boys. You know? See? So, you know, this notion of renewal is very important. And, of course, language is binary, and in the other one, it's about process. Okay? It's about process. We can go on. And in current science, I've mentioned a notion about the Higgs particle, and we would say that it really is about transformation, because in the flux notion, it's all about transformation and so on. That's why in native thought, hey, people can change forms, and there's many stories about that. In other words, the outer anthropomorphic, the actual structure, the actual anthropomorphic form of anything is not important. In other words, somebody can shift from a human to a dog to a horse and back again. And that happens. And it has happened. So anthropomorphic aspects are not important. What is important is the underlying commonality, and that is the spirit. See, that's what's important. And, you know, the grand unified theory, as we've said, won't happen with the existing approach, with the standard model. So if we're going to move forward in science, we're going to have to, like David Bohm says, we're going to have to look at science from a different point of view, from a different perspective, because the existing approach is not giving us the answers. All it is asking is, we're just asking more questions, okay? But we're not getting any answers. So when you bring these two foundational bases of the approach, I see possibilities, especially in the area of quantum physics and native science, entering into powerful relationships, into collaborations. I've gone so far to say, in 50 years from now, in 70 years from now, Aboriginal people are going to be out in the forefront of science. because they already have the mentality for it. Okay? The only comment I would say, and I'll close with that, is that many people refer to technology as science. And I say it's not. Technology is not science. Technology is about the application of what is already known. Science is about pursuit of knowledge. It's about stretching the envelope, getting into something that's unknown. That's what science is about. But technology really is about what is already known, the application of what is known. We have all our toys, our cell phones, all the modern electronic conveniences. Well, did you know that the knowledge behind, the scientific knowledge behind all that existed in the 50s? In other words, scientists knew about those kind of electronic stuff a long time ago. It's just now being applied. In other words, technology is just now catching up. Okay. So a lot of people mix technology with science. Okay? But technology is not science. The science I'm talking about is that science that delves into the unknown. And with the flux notion, hey, Aboriginal people on a daily basis are forever dealing with the flux. From that point of view, we are and have always been scientists. Thank you.